Welcome to Elgin Movie Watchers podcast. I'm Chuck Slatkin, and I'm here with my co-host Steve Gould. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great, and we're also here with our eminent producer, Ian. And I do hope, Ian, you're going to join us on this celebratory podcast.
Oh yeah, I'm in. Let's talk about
it. Okay.
We had decided that we would do this episode on comedies and film, and what a topic, Steve.
Yeah, but I mean, what we, you know, when we were talking about ideas, the one thing that we thought of was different genre. And of course, the bright idea that we had for the first one was comedies, which, as you pointed out, is incredibly broad. And since podcasts normally don't run 2 days, we might have to separate things a little and come back to the well another time for additional comments about comedies, don't you think?
No, I agree. First of all, finding out what like critics or people in the business think of the best comedies, that's a whole place to look and see, but also to see what I think are my favorite or best comedies or whatever. So I decided I would start at the beginning, and if I can indulge for a few minutes to talk about,
sure.
As a kid, my father would take me to see the latest Martin and Lewis film that came out. We would go to the Lowe's American Theater that was located in Parkchester. It wasn't like the ornate, elaborate Lowe's Paradise that was, you know, located in the West Bronx on the concourse. But the Lowe's American Theater was still pretty ornate for a neighborhood theater located in Parkchester. You know, there were two other theaters that were located, independent theaters, but they were no way like, you know, the Lowe's American. It had carpets, it had elaborate, you know, some chandeliers. It was an amazing place to go. Yeah. And I recall three films that my father took me to. I think actually you may have gone with my sister, the first two, and then she was, you know, 4.5 years older than me, and then somewhere along begged off and didn't want to go see the Marx Brothers. But the first one I remember seeing, and one that really stuck with me, was Jumping Jacks, Martin and Lewis, 1952. And like all of their other, you know, movies, there were elements, there was music and performing. I mean, Dean Martin himself sang with Jerry Lewis did, they were dancing and whatever, but these are just, they were like, worked in the nightclub, but Dean Martin ended up getting, I guess, I don't know, drafted into the military, and Jerry Lewis went out there to, you know, to visit him, whatever it was, and somehow he ended up being in the training for Jumping Jacks 2 without even being in the military. But it was like, it was a black and white film. And again, probably I was maybe like 6 years old when I went to see it. So it was a little sophisticated for me to figure out exactly everything that was what was going on. But I still liked it. It made sense to me. And the next one I remembered seeing was probably a year later. And sometimes Martin and Lewis, they came out with two films in the same year back in the 50s. They were cranking these things out, and none of them would be considered great films, you know, maybe okay or something. But this was Scared Stiff.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites. Yeah.
You know, the busboy and the nightclub singer, and they end up in Cuba, of all places, right? The free revolutionary Cuba, and ended up in the spooky, whatever it was. And again, what I really wanted to see was Jerry Lewis carry on, you know, and do his stuff in that thing. But, I enjoyed the film. They certainly were produced in such a way that, you know, I could understand it. And the next one was Living It Up, which I think, so I was like maybe 8 years old. And it was in color.
Oh.
I remembered that, you know, just because I'm used to seeing black and white films, and there it was in color. And Jerry Lewis was a station master in some small town in New Mexico and wanted to go to New York. And somehow the plot gets him to the point where he's misdiagnosed of having radiation poison. But it turns out just to be, you know, sinus trouble or something. Dean Martin's the doctor. but the story gets out to some New York newspaper, and they come out to New Mexico to take this guy so he can spend his last like 3 weeks of life in, you know, in New York City, you know, and the paper will pay for everything and whatever. And Dean Martin and Lewis basically collude, okay, we won't tell him the truth this way, we bet
3 weeks in New York,
get to New York or longer or whatever. And it's a you know, a crazy movie and whatever, but in it are just great shots of New York City from the 1950s. So to me, you know, of the three of them, I would probably look to watch that again, more so because of that than any of the film or whatever, because, you know, as a 6, 7, 8 year old, what appealed to me in Jerry Lewis' physical comedy and whatever, you know, now as an ancient person, maybe I look at it a little differently, you know, 70 years later. Anyway, but to me, the excitement that I felt, the palpable excitement of the walk from where we lived to the Lowe's American Theater, knowing I was going to see a Martin and Lewis film, I was just, you know, out of my mind with anticipation, happiness, or whatever. And it was never where I was disappointed going through the experience of watching Martin and Lewis film and eating popcorn.
Yeah.
So that's where my comedy films began, I guess.
Well, you know, you hit on something that's very, very important, and something that I think we tried to do when we had the Elgin, and that was turn people on to particular films. And, you know, in this case, we're talking about comedies. When you see something for the first time, and you're turned on to it by someone, you know, thank God it was your father, Ben, and you had a great time. You even remember the walk to the theater and stuff. Those, you know, those things, you just, you know, you can't pay for anything as good as that. So, I mean, I truly hope that in the short years we had the Elgin, and people would see a movie, a comedy at the Elgin for the first time and go, wow, boy, this is, and whether it was a Buster Keaton, you know, a Charlie Chaplin, or a more contemporary one, they would be turning to a friend and saying, listen, you gotta see this film and stuff. So I think that for me, I enjoy that so much. You know, when I was getting ready, you know, for us to talk about it, one of my all-time favorite Broadway shows was with Zero Mostel and Jack Guilford, called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And they have a wonderful song in it that, you know, has a lot of things about something appealing, something appalling. But it goes, tragedy tomorrow, comedy tonight.
Sing it, Steve.
I really thought that it is so great. You know, I love foreign films. I love suspense. But to turn somebody on to a comedy makes my heart, as they say in Ireland, cavil. So, yeah. and you know, I still think of the days with you and I sitting in the Elgin box office. Not box office, sorry. That'd be a little crowded. But sitting down in the office.
Took turns on who would sit on the other's lap.
Yeah. But in the office, and we'd be talking about, you know, like the farting scene in Blazing Saddles, or all these things, you know. When you can share that experience. And as I said, you know, if I got put on an island and I needed a couple of movies, one of the movies that my wife Nancy and I always talk about, and every time it comes on, we see it, is a Mel Brooks movie called The Producers with Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks. And even though, you know a movie so well, you start hearing the words before it even comes on the screen and you start laughing. And that's what comedies can give to you. They really can.
Yeah, well, I agree with you 100%. And again, for me, like mentioned on an earlier episode, but I'll repeat it again since we're talking comedies, is the fact that other than what I had seen on you know, TV screens, small TV screens when I was younger, you know, I really didn't have the experience of seeing the great silent movies until I got to the Elgin and seeing them on a giant screen, sitting there with an audience in the dark, And I guess really what it comes down to, as we mentioned it before, is like, you know, Buster Keaton, which we, you know, showed many of his films, also Chaplin, but also, you know, Harold Lloyd, the couple of Harold Lloyd films that we had shown at the Elgin, but just an understanding and how, you know, funny they are, how funny they some of them still are watching them again, and having that experience again. I always talk about, well, people, you know, streaming and whatever, and Steve's always saying, we got to get to the theater. The reality is this, you know, a comedy at the theater,
yeah,
or a theater, I should say, is really just amazing. And to be in a theater, you know, watching, you know, Sherlock Jr. or something with an audience roaring.
Oh, yeah.
It was a phenomenal experience. And again, if you talk to people or read things about comedy, too often people leave out the silence or the films of that era. You know, maybe throw in one or two, but the whole, how rich it is, and, you know, just an amazing, you know, filmmaker, you know, they were, and the stuff that, you know, Keaton accomplished, not just in terms of humor, but, you know, the physicality of what he did and the brilliance of, you know, the directing and starring in it. So I just felt, you know, it's important to mention that because, you know, I was really, in a sense, you know, ignorant of those films until I got involved, you know, with the Elgin, and then just to go to the seeing it, you know, shown the right way on a big screen with an audience. What an experience.
I think one of my favorite Chaplin films actually is his first full-length film called The Kid with Jackie Coogan, who is, you know, adopted by Chaplin's character there, the little tramp. And, you know, it was a full-length movie that Chaplin developed in 1921. I mean, it was a silent era period. But he also wrote and composed a score so that when it played in a movie theater, it played his music for the pathos that he wanted. When you think of what sometimes it takes to get the comedy across, and I mean, this was not like a belly laugh comedy, right. The Kid, but it was so charming, and you could have a laugh about Chaplin, you know, as the little tramp with Jackie Coogan, who was at that time a little boy and stuff, you know. So, and then you go to the other thing with Chaplin that, you know, everybody kind of talks about, which is one of his talking films in the 30s with Paulette Goddard, Modern Times. I mean, wow. I mean, what a difference. But he always gave you things to laugh about. And it was like the same with Keaton. I have to tell our listeners, viewers, that you really did a mitzvah for me at the Elgin. And it shows sometimes that not everybody likes all kinds of comedy. And I had said to you, Chuck, you know, we got a chance. I want to throw in a double bill of Peter Sellers, early Peter Sellers. And there's two movies of his that, you know, started out when he came out of Spike Milligan's goon thing and he was doing stuff. And one was I'm All Right, Jack. And the other was, I think, Two-Way Stretch. So I put that in. I booked that in for, I think it was 2 days. And I was going upstairs. I was thinking, we're going to see the crowds in there and they're going to be falling out of their chairs laughing so much. Well, I think I was in the theater with maybe four or five other people. And it could have been a funeral parlor. It was so quiet. So, you know.
But at least you could get a good seat.
Yes, right. So I guess in a sense, it's no accounting for taste, even when it comes to comedies, too.
Who knows? I mean, and also, you know, you can, you know, love a comedy film and you saw it and then you watch it again years later and just don't react the same way. You could see another comedy that was then okay at the time, and then now you're roaring, and so you change. The film doesn't change, but you know how you know. And just thinking of, you know, favorite comedies you know that I've seen in my life, and you know, just the list became, you know, it was like endless.
Really.
Like again, I remember like it's a mad world. Going to see that. I guess it was at some big.
big theater
was
down
it,
on Broadway. No,
on
that was
Broadway.
At the, yeah, on Broadway. Yeah, that was at the Warner Theater there, and it was in Tadeo Scope or something. It was enormous, and that was the film where Jimmy Durante kicked the bucket.
That's it. It's just from what I remember at the time, it didn't get good reviews. People were saying it was too much, but just to see all the great comedians, even if they had just had them in there for a little bit, including, you know, the silent comedians who were still alive.
Buster Keaton,
so to me, it was like, but it had a long running time, right? It was 3 hours or something.
Oh, yeah, it was at least two and a half.
Yeah,
close to 3 hours. But, you know, you're talking about people said, oh, there was too much and too much. Brings us to a movie that I adore. I assume both of you enjoy watching it too. And that had, people thought, too much in it. But the Zucker brothers, when they wrote it and they directed it, Airplane has got more stuff packed in that movie. I mean, you look at, who was it? Lloyd Bridges, sniffing glue, and then a white woman, talking
Mrs. Cleaver talking jive at that.
Right, yeah. Mrs. Cleaver talking jive. I mean, all of those things were just, you know, and I mean, so that was like Mad Mad World, a modern version, because these guys just packed it in.
Yeah.
And it was a hit. I mean, Paramount just, you know, blew out of the water with the comedy that they could have there.
Both of those films were the first of their kind, right? Like Mad, Mad, Mad World was the first kind of like road rash, you know, everyone's got a race to get something comedy. And how many times has that been done since? And Airplane was, you know, the first like ridiculous over the top film that is now spawned on to be like Scary Movie. And obviously all the other Zucker Brothers, you know, films,
Naked
Guns and stuff like that. So both of those, yeah, those are staples in the world of film because they were the originals.
And a movie that I've seen repeatedly, but I find it very amusing, I'm still quoting lines from it, is A Fish Called Wanda.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, don't call me stupid. You know, it just, everything works so well in that, you know. It's great to see something. And then I think, you know, like Airplane, that's the kind of movie that, I don't know who couldn't get at least a couple of giggles out of, you know?
Yeah, so, well, they're great comedies. They're good comedies. They're comedies that we like. I mean, probably the film that I've seen the most of any film, maybe because I just happened to run into it on TV. No one would consider it a great film, but Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I still laugh at that movie.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. No, I can see that. A movie that I think is a quintessential comedy that belonged on the Elgin screen was Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was...
Oh, I still like that scene with Chill Wills riding the bomb down. You know, he gets on the bomb and says, I'll be seeing you in all familiar places. You know, it's a movie that just keeps on giving, you know. And who would think that Stanley Kubrick could deliver that much of a comedy? I mean, granted, it's a very dark comedy, but it is a funny film.
Yes, definitely. I'd like to also go from that because, in a sense, when I look at comedies, maybe I'm like a comedy bigot, because to me, a lot of like romantic so-called slash comedies or comedy dramas or whatever have humor in it, but I don't see them as comedies. And it's also hard for me, you know, to look at, you know, like animated films as a comedy or even like some kind of adventure type films that have comedy in it that are referred to as a comedy. But to me, like, you know, Dr. Strangelove or How I Stopped Worrying About the Bomb, is that the full title?
Yeah.
You know, that to me, even though there are other elements in it that you know, discussed and whatever, to me, that's a comedy film, even though it has other elements in it or deals with serious issues. So I don't know, maybe it's a problem with
me.
That was going to be the main thing that I was going to bring up because I feel like comedy, yes, you know, there's specific comedies that are comedy hits and whatever, but there's a lot of comedies, like, you know, for instance, when I thought about like early comedies that I liked, like I was like, I thought of The Apartment. Like, I mean, I think of dark comedies also as comedy. Right. It's not a dark comedy, but His Girl Friday. I thought that was a comedy.
And oh, wow. Boy, you're talking about one of my favorites.
Yeah, I don't think we'd argue with that.
And that, I mean, the dialogue in that, I mean, they should use that movie when they're teaching writing credits for movies. You can't get a better script than His Girl Friday.
And it's amazing that that's still a remake. Like, there was a silent, there was a front page silent film. And that's a remake of that in 1930s or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, 37. Yeah.
And then, but I consider, I mean, I was thinking about it and I was like, do I consider this movie a comedy? But it's very comedic in a way. And it has a lot of laughs. The Third Man. I find that to be, you know.
Oh, The Third Man. Yeah.
I laugh at that film. So I was like, well, do I consider that a comedy? I don't know. You know, because it's like a lot of movies are fine line. Because it's like, you know, if you start knocking out films like that, then, you know, you're going to knock out some comedic actors' films, which I feel like.
Yeah, I have a problem with The Third Man because I love the music so much. I keep humming the music and missing the lines.
I watched The Third Man. I whistled that for at least a month.
But when Chuck brought up the thing about, you know, what ostensibly some people would call rom-coms, I understand what you're saying, but some of them can be a little dark, and I can't remember the name. An Asian actor, I think he might have been Indian or Pakistani.
The Big Sick.
The Big Sick. That's it. The Big Sick, and it is a comedy, but you know she's almost dying at one point, you know, and I mean it was, but everybody. You know, has a laugh. So, I mean, there are things that can be nuanced, and even a rom-com can have a strange love twist to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I preface what I was saying as being a bigot.
It's
a good argument, but I just, you know, in a sense.
Maybe we can see if we have black and white bigots, because there was a very recent film that was made in black and white and had no soundtrack, called The Artist. And I thought that film was phenomenal, but I might be in the minority.
I saw it and enjoyed it.
Oh, okay. Did you see it, Ian?
To be honest, I own it and I've never watched it. I bought it on DVD and I've never watched it.
Wow.
That's even more serious.
Yeah.
Than just going to see
it.
He owns it. So getting back, if I can, to a film that meets the description, I guess, because of what the content was trying to, what they were trying to do, but to me it was a riot, was The Mouse That Roared, you know, as a critique of the United States or whatever, but it was a funny comedy that had, you know, elements to it. And I would put that in one of my top, whatever number it would be of comedies, that for me personally.
You know, I mean, those kind of films, even though I, you know, the Sellers double bill was a bust. I, to this day, if there's an English film on, there's a film I don't think either of you guys might have seen, but it is in the Janus catalog, and it's called Passport to Pimlico. And it's that there's this giant bomb that they discovered after World War II, and they're routing, you know, the underground trains around and stuff. All of a sudden, Pimlico is like an outlier town within London, and it becomes its own little country, and it sets up the. It is very, very amusing in a dated sense. You know, you have to understand that it's a black and white film. It takes place right after World War II. But that was.
I wrote it down. I'm going to check it out, and if it's available on.
But, you know, all those movies like the Alec Guinness things with the Lavender Hill Mob, Kind Hearts Coronet, Lady Killers, they were a riot. I mean, so you can get some good action out of a movie of the 60s that actually was an English film, but it was released here in the States by Fox. was with Dudley Moore and Peter Cook called Bedazzled.
Oh, yeah. We played that in the Elgin.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it. Some films don't hold up. I'll give you an example. I loved when we played it, Magic Christian, and I saw it recently, and I don't think it has the legs that I had hoped that it would. But whereas Bedazzled, when I saw it, there's enough in it, and I think it maybe had to do with the acting of Dudley Moore and Peter Cook, that it held up for me. So, and then, of course, you have to throw in, speaking of rom-coms, one of the movies that started all of this stuff with guys going after girls and stuff, and that was an early Michael Caine, Alfie.
Ah, yes. Another film that I guess maybe doesn't hold up because there was such a successful TV show that came after it for years, was the original Odd Couple film, which was funny, but I don't think necessarily, you know, would be the same now because of the way that the TV show came and that almost the identity of
I think
it was
right.
More a television show. So
yeah,
I think people would rather watch Grumpy Old Men.
Okay, I understand that.
First of all, Burgess Meredith in those films is fantastic.
Oh, he's terrific. Yeah. And lest we forget, Chuck, we can add another foreign film to our list of comedies. And we played the hell out of it at the Elgin. And that was La Grande Bouffe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Four guys that ate themselves to death. Oh, man.
Yes, that was not your typical comedy, to say the least. But
No.
But then, you know, there were some other movies that, you know, for me personally, that I would watch again if I came, at least part of it, if it was on television going through. But Caddyshack, to me, that's still, I still laugh at aspects of that movie.
Okay, and, but now, in reference to that, with Caddyshack, do you feel the same about Groundhog Day as you do Caddyshack?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I watch Groundhog Day even when it's not on. No, I enjoy that movie.
Okay.
But the thing about it is that's actually a remake that you can't read about anywhere. I saw a version of Groundhog Day with a different cast from years earlier, unless I dreamt it. And that was actually almost the exact plot. I should have researched that before I brought it up today.
Yeah, might be a lawsuit there.
I think so. I just, you know, so that and another movie, I don't know how you would think, see if it holds up, is the Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming.
Oh, sure.
Which, when
that.
It came out, was just, you know, outrageously funny.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. I've seen it. I think the script is strong enough that it holds up. And, you know, two things when we're talking silent films and the pantheon of comedy back in the old days. We didn't even mention something that we used to play the hell out of, and that was the Marx Brothers. You know, we had Night at the Opera, one of my favorites, you know, and that stateroom scene. You know, it just, all of the timing on that, you know, I shot an elephant in my pajamas. How he got there, I'll never know. You know, it's just, all those lines are just really phenomenal. But also in that event is a comedy team. And these, you know, these are people that did vaudeville too, that we really never played, I don't think, any of their films, but I think we have to give them some lip service at least. And that's Abbott and Costello.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And the other one, which is one of my favorites, is Laurel and Hardy.
Definitely.
Which actually brings me to something about Movie Watch. We interviewed, actually, well, we had my now wife, Nancy Keller, doing some interviews on the show. They had the guy that you interviewed as a director previously.
Landis.
Yeah, John Landis.
John Landis.
He got a grant from the American Film Institute. They made this movie called Hot Tomorrows, which starred Ray Sharkey and another guy. In it is a scene where this guy goes to visit his grandmother in a nursing home. And she hasn't come down from her room yet. So in the community room, he sits next to this real old broad. On the television, is Laurel and Hardy. And the movie that they're in on that television is Way Out West. And they're doing their dance together. We're going home. And the character in the movie Hot Tomorrows turns to this old lady in conversation and says, "Wow, they are great." And the old lady looks at him as if he's crazy, saying, "They're dead, you know." I mean, it was like, I don't think there's any, I don't know even if it's available, but if you want to see a terrific movie, and it actually has some cameos in with people like Orson Welles, it's called Hot Tomorrows. And we reviewed it and interviewed the guys in it and the director on Movie Watch. So I wanted to bring that up in reference to a favorite character, two favorite actors of mine, Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy.
We did play some Laurel and Hardy at the Elton.
Right.
We played Sons of the Desert, right?
Yes, Sons of the Desert we did play. Yes, that's correct. It's a fine mess you got me into this time.
Yeah. It should be like, when we talk about comedies, there should be a special category just for the Marx Brothers to talk about that, because, you know, some of their films were great. Some not so great. Sometimes they, you know, didn't have control and they were having to, you know, play roles that were dictated by the studios as opposed to having their own. But still, you know, worth watching, and lots of laughs. It's still laugh out loud stuff as far as I'm concerned. So, and Ian mentioned Young Frankenstein. That's still like
fabulous.
Classic from the beginning.
No, Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
You take the bags. All right, I'll take the blonde. You take the one in the Toyman. You know, I mean, only Mel Brooks. I mean, he was not a vaudevillian, but he should have been. I mean, the shtick that he could do was
something like it hot.
Phenomenal, yeah. And actually, there's a my wife Nancy heard me mentioning comedies, and she put her two cents in, and I have to agree with her. Billy Wilder made a quintessential comedy with Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis and Marilyn Monroe, Some Like It Hot.
Yep.
And we
heard her too, Steve.
Okay. I got to say, one of the best final lines of a movie is Joey Brown sitting next to Tony Curtis and Dre. They're talking about getting married. And he says, what do you mean? Why can't we? He takes his wig off, you know. And he says, I'm a man. And he says, well, nobody's perfect. You know, I mean.
That's one of the great movie comedies. I mean, that's something everyone can enjoy. It's still funny and really is. It's a great film. The question is, can we talk about movie comedies and not talk about Woody Allen?
Oh, well, I was just going to mention that. Yeah. I was going to mention that because one of, I think, his best films is something that is close to our heart because it deals with a city that we love. And I think his actual best film is Midnight in Paris. That is phenomenal. It really is. It hits on all notes, and he's not in it. He realizes that we don't need an Alta Kaka on the screen.
Right,
finally. And his character is in it, but I mean, it's done so well and so charming. It's almost like, I know, in the cancel culture, we shouldn't be doing things like that, but I do anyhow.
I just wanted to mention, not that I necessarily want to go into it in detail. I mean, at the time, you know, I liked the stuff. The first Woody Allen Film Festival anywhere took place at the Elgin. I mean, that was a reality. Yep. It's not like he did, you know, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, but he did some pretty good stuff.
And we haven't, the strange thing is that I see that, you know, there are Italian comedies. I mean, we can talk about them. They were big in the 60s. They could be dated now. And certainly we talked about one of them, French comedy, La Grande Bouffe, but there are certainly others, especially Truffaut had a few. But I was looking up and I had a real problem finding any real comedies that crossed over into other cultures from Germany. I don't know if I can really pick out a German film that's comedic that, you know, we showed at the Elgin or, you know.
I don't think Triumph of the Will actually makes it.
No, I don't think it makes it, no. But if Mel Brooks made it, maybe. Yeah, I think that, you know, we've only, it's like that song, we've only just begun. Yeah. In terms of the movies that people could call comedies, there were so many more. Maybe we should plumb the depths a little more and come back for our listeners with another episode of this genre. What do you think, Chuck and Ian?
I think that's a good idea. There's just one more film before we leave this one that I would like to mention. The Big Lebowski.
The Dude.
As one of those films that it seems to me that people enjoy watching over and over again and watch it more than just once or twice. And,
I have to tell something about Lebowski. I screened it when I was still working in, you know, quotes, the biz, and I did not like it when I saw it the first time.
Okay.
But after seeing it a couple more times, I think it's a riot. So it goes to say exactly what you were saying before, you know. Yeah. The film is always the film. And it could be that you like it and now you don't, or it could be that you didn't like it and now you do.
That's a very good point. And of course, you're agreeing with me.
Yes.
But before we go on, I haven't done this throughout the whole podcast. And I should say that people can follow us on Twitter at Elgin Movie, Instagram at Elgin Movie Watchers, on Facebook at Elgin Movie Watchers Podcast. And you can always contact us by email at ElginMovieWatchers@gmail.com. So we have
sounds
to get
good
that
to
on
me.
There. So yeah, let's maybe do a episode on comedies, because I'm sure we're going to think of things that we didn't think of to talk about, or things are going to, you know, it's such a broad genre, and one that brings a lot of pleasure, and a good comedy, a new comedy that comes out. I want to see it as much as I want to see the classics.
I agree.
Getting that a good laugh. So I'll say, we should thank everybody for listening to this episode, watching this episode, to get that opportunity.
And we should say good night, Gracie.
Yes, or even good afternoon or good morning, depending on when you're hearing this. And thank everybody for checking out Elgin Movie Watchers Podcast, and say that's it for this episode.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Ian.
Take care. Take care, Chuck. Take care, Ian.
See ya. Thank you.